This is 100 at 100, Research for Our Next Century, a series of episodes to highlight research on the campus to celebrate the 100th birthday of the University of Texas at El Paso. My name is Keith Pannell, and today we're going to be talking with Professor Tony Stafford, who I heard several years ago talk about the role of wine in Macbeth. It was fascinating. So, Tony, tell us, wine, Macbeth, where does it all come from?
Okay, there's a scene right after Macbeth has murdered Duncan. We hear this loud banging on the door. And it's the drunken porter answering the door. And they want to know what took him so long getting there. And he said, "We've been carousing all night." And he goes on to talk about the effects of wine on us when we drink too much. He says it produces three things: nose painting, sleep, and urine. And many critics, especially early on, they thought maybe that scene wasn't by Shakespeare. And the other critics have not known what to do with it. How does it fit into the play? Well, I discovered that the Macbeths do quite a bit of drinking themselves. There was a big state dinner. Lady Macbeth, when she comes in and they have drugged the guards on Duncan's door, and they're unconscious, and she says, "That which has made them drunk has made me bold. That which has quenched their thirst has given me fire." She had been drinking because she thought she was going to murder Duncan. She goes into the room and she comes back out and says she can't do it because it looks too much like her father. We know that Macbeth says that when my drink is ready, ring the bell. There's just a lot of references by them to drinking. And in the scene, they have a state dinner again. You remember when he sees the ghost of Banquo, they were going to drink many measures there, which would have been at least five full glasses of wine.
So there's all these allusions throughout the
play.
Yeah,
and lots of adjectives and verbs that talk about drinking a great deal.
Just let me jump quickly then. You've got a new theme for your latest book. It's George Bernard Shaw. Very quickly, why and how?
Well, I started teaching a course called Modern British Drama many years ago. Nobody else wanted it. And we started with Shaw. And I started reading Shaw and getting into him and realized that he was a remarkable playwright. Well, Shakespeare is considered the greatest playwright in the English language. If you pick a second place, it would probably have to be Shaw. Or at least Shaw himself says that. In fact, he says he's better than Shakespeare.
Well, he was also a music critic, right?
Yes, he is, and an art critic, a drama critic, yeah.
Was he as good in writing in his criticisms as he was in his plays?
His writing is incredible. He and Shakespeare share this verbal genius in common. He was just really a linguistic genius. But anyway, as I started looking at more and more of Shaw's plays, I realized that there were certain patterns that had to have some meaning, some significance to them. And what I discovered, well, the book that was published by the University of Florida Press, the title of the book is Shaw's Settings, Gardens and Libraries. And as I moved from play to play, I discovered gardens and libraries over and over and over again, in each play used differently with a different significance, often metaphorically, but always giving us an insight into the characters and into what's going on.
And that's what you spend a career doing, reading the literature and delving into it for
it's
your
a great life.
Students. It is indeed a great
it's
life.
It's a great life. It
indeed,
really is.
You've had a great career at the University of Texas at El Paso. So thank you very much, Tony Stafford, Professor of English at the University of Texas at El Paso. And this is 100 at 100, Research for Our Next Century, celebrating the 100th birthday of that fine institution. And my name is Keith Pannell.